Hello and welcome to the Piecast from Pie and Vinyl. And in a strange turn of events, we're somewhere different and new. And we'll explain a little bit more about that later and what pie and hi-fi means to you and your family. I'm James Sandy and I'm joined as ever by Steve.
Hello.
And by Rad.
Hi, hi.
And we've got very comfortable chairs and very homely, I think, surroundings. But we're going to start by talking about some records that are really, we've been engrossed in, I think, over the last couple of months. We haven't had a podcast since April, I think, this
Record
year.
Record Store Day.
Record Store Day. Out in the cold and the chill.
Special one, that one.
It's all changed now. But we're going to talk about a couple of records that have been on our radar. And I think, Steve, we're going to start with you.
Okay.
I caught him out there. Yeah. Did you see? I caught him. I threw it in his corner.
I thought you were clockwise. Right. Okay. Here we go.
Surprise tactics.
Surprise, surprise. And welcome to the jungle. Jungle. Picked the record up when it was released a couple of weeks ago. Been lucky enough to see the guys play. Absolutely blew me away at the Great Escape. They are a kind of hybrid of 70s disco with early 90s R&B. Great musicians. Great ideas. Man, I'm digging this. It's their debut record. It's a couple of guys lead the project called Jay and T. They were producers. They were in another band formerly as well. They kind of broke last year with a bit of a mysterious PR campaign where they used to play in darkness. No one saw their faces. Their very early 7-inch release. People were unsure whether they were black, white, what they looked like. That kind of really worked for them. I think the industry expected big things from them, and they've well and truly delivered, probably the debut of the year so far for me. So if you like the Bee Gees, mixed with Sade, mixed with some really funky stuff, but also some very clever kind of lyrical darkness, shall I say, and quite contemporary subjects, check out Jungle.
And when you're strutting around at home in the lounge, what I'm interested, what colour slacks are you wearing? Because, you know, that for me, that's how I gauge the mood of an album. What kind of variant do you think you...
Well, I'd be wearing green Adidas tracksuit bottoms with yellow stripes.
You are the man. But in darkness, of course.
In darkness.
You can't see that.
The top half would be a black leather jacket.
Rad, we're going to move to you now, but I'm not going to ask you about your trousers, which are ripped, I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, I
just
know.
on the knee, you might need
I've
to get that looked at. I've
been spending too much money on records.
Fell over on gravy.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Bullied at school again, we'll have to talk about that
on
later.
Gravy.
What have you been listening to? What have you
Okay. I'm gonna save the obvious one till next.
Oh, good.
The record that I've been listening to a fair amount since Record Store Day, which came out just after Record Store Day, in fact, I think it came out the 29th of April, would be Oughts, the band Ought, their debut album, which was released on Constellation Records. They could be mistaken for a Montreal-based band. They're not. They come from the US, and I think they've got a member from Australia as well, which is kind of conflicts with the whole Constellation thing, and it's the whole DIY local sort of attitude.
Mm.
And the other thing that conflicts with that would be that it's kind of got an art, it's got an art punk feel to it in terms of its construction as an album. And Constellation are best known for their work with like Godspeed You Black Emperor and like really kind of gazy kind of post-rock stuff. So this album is not that in any way, shape or form. It's got an insane kind of rhythm to it. It's the lyrics are really catchy. They're not too serious. But they're also deep enough for you to, you know, consider life in its wider context.
Is it that kind of jaunty but serious bracket? Is it there?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's playful, but playful in such a way that it's well thought out, you know, like in terms of its lyrical content. Like the title track, which is Today More Than Any Other Day, it just begins as kind of a list of what this chap wants to achieve with his day more than any other day, but it kind of sends you off considering your position within society, I'd say, and the overcomplicated society that we exist in today as well. You know, it's got that, in terms of its kind of punky force, it's got that to it, I'd say. Yeah, it's a lovely record, really, really well put together in terms of musicianship. The fact that it's Constellation release means you get serious bang for your bucks. You know, the artwork is really well laid out. It comes with like nice inserts. The feel of the record's really tasty. It's brilliant, and I'm super chuffed with it. And we're catching up with Jabberwocky in less than 2 weeks, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited to watch that band twice over the course of that little 2-dayer.
He's itching, isn't he?
Yeah.
I wonder what it was, but it's enthusiasm, I'm glad to say. I'm glad that's what it is.
It's not beer-less.
So we were going to one of the things we were going to mention, I think we can all talk about, big release that I've been excited by and obsessed by, in fact, when it came out. It came out on the 14th of July, which for every French person is a liberation in itself, but for me, it was a liberation of a different kind. Morrissey. We're going to mention the Morrissey record, which came out, World Peace Is None of Your Business, which is a classic title, I think, a classic Morrissey kind of title.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a great album. There's some really, as you would expect, there's some real dark humour. There's, I think he sounds great. I think as he gets older, his voice, there's new things added to his voice. I read some of the kind of reviews of this album saying, oh, well, you know, he's taking a bit of a backseat, there's more instrumental stuff. And I kind of think, well, no, what he's done is he's really perfected the Morrissey sound, you know, very different from the Smith sound as well. And, you know, we know Johnny Marr's up to new things as well and he's got a second album out. But I really like this album. I think there are two standout tracks for me. One is the second track on the album, which is Neil Cassady, Drops Dead. That's what it's saying. And if you get a chance, go online onto the Fabulous Tinterband and find out the story behind Neil Cassady, okay, if you don't know that already. And that's a great standout track. And the other one is I'm Not a Man, which is a very obscure title, but quite an intriguing set of things. But you've both kind of dabbled with this as well. You kind of had listens to the album. What were your thoughts?
It really took me by surprise, to be honest. I love Morrissey. I love the Smiths. I'm reading his Penguin Classic autobiography at the moment.
That's a good read.
It's great. I love the cover. I love how there's a dog, which to me replicates us, the world, and Morrissey looking very patronising with some kind of whistle or pen in his hand.
That's right. It's not obvious, actually, when you look at the cover, what he is doing. And he is kind of, he's looking down on the dog with a pen, I think.
Almost gesturing to the dog. Sit there and do as I say, almost like the powers that be do to us.
He's kind of saying, you thought this was a chocolatey treat, didn't you, Fido? But no, it's a pen, and it's mightier than the sword, and I will keep you down with it, I will oppress you. Mm. But am I really free? Mm. Is that what he's saying? Maybe I've read into it too much.
The pen is the essential component there, because that's the gift that he's not allowing the dog, or tricking the dog. Because a dog wouldn't know it's a pen.
Oh, wouldn't a dog-themed Morrissey album be great? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Kind of special dogs can only hear at a certain pitch, can't they?
So they can.
Morrissey can probably sing in that pitch. Don't worry about that.
He could pretty much sing on any range he likes, I think. Very strangely, just before the album was released, there were some YouTube clips of Morrissey kind of in a dinner suit by a piano, doing spoken word versions of some of the lyrics, kind of the poetic kind of element to it. So it's it was a really interesting album.
And still really spits, doesn't he, with titles like The Bullfighter Dies. And, you know, he does always get in his... He does push his beliefs on people and kind of insists almost live, you know, if he's playing at festivals, he will kind of say, I can smell burgers, that's horrible, stop over there, you know. And we all know his feelings on animal cruelty, and a lot of his fans probably agree with him. And The Bullfighter Dies I get that and can celebrate that as well.
And it came kind of almost out of nowhere. Like, he was last seen booking ill-advised shows, I think, with Cliff Richard and Tom Jones somewhere in the States. But God bless you,
that's
Moz.
Fun,
I think if you ever get anywhere near this to listen. Rad, I'm going to come back to you because I've misjudged the obvious record. So I'm going to ask you, what should I have been obviously looking at?
Yeah, no, the obvious album that I wanted to talk about and can't seem to stop talking about would be Lazaretto. Jack White's release. Whether you're into the White Stripes or not, or you're into Jack White's solo stuff or not, or you're obsessed with Third Man Records or not, this album is firstly impressive in itself in terms of musical content and in terms of it being a decent piece of musical work.
It's got a very fresh sound, I think, for him.
It does, but it's also got enough of what you'd expect from him for it to be just a continuation, a natural continuation. The band that he's kind of picked up for his solo stuff is phenomenal. I love that band and they sound great. I think they compliment him, he compliments them, and having watched him live on this touring this album, got to see them perform instead of just kind of imagining it or just hearing it.
Were they beautifully turned out, as the album cover suggests, that, you know, the kind of blue shark suit?
Well,
kind of...
everyone knows Jack White to be, you know, a kind of all that stuff is very contrived and very kind of intentional. But I don't think there was as much it was as much so as what it might have been if for the White Stripes, for example. You know, it wasn't, there was a lot more freedom. They weren't all wearing the same clothes. I mean, funnily enough, it was at Glastonbury that I saw him, and he did have an entire, all of his stage guys came out wearing black suits, blue ties, white shirts, and they all had beards. Every one of them had a beard as big as mine.
That's quite big, ladies and gentlemen.
And, you know, so he's obviously selected those people, but in terms of the actual band themselves, they all looked very smart, but they certainly didn't. They weren't all dressed following a theme.
No
green tracky bottoms like our young Steve here.
No, sadly not. But you know,
the big theme on the Blunderbuss tour was obviously taking a male, all male band, or an all woman band, female band. On stage, and apparently he would only let them know on the actual day of the performance who would be playing. I mean, with this one, he's got a bit of soul in there, I guess. Got to be careful here, but they've got a black drummer, for example.
Yeah, and he was awesome.
He was
incredible. Phenomenal. He spent most of his time drumming standing up, which was impressive to behold. And the funny thing is, as well, I mean, when I caught them live, they played. I mean, my friend jokingly said it was like a White Stripes cover band, and to a certain extent, it was. I think, but they were playing Glastonbury, so there is going to be a degree of. I mean, the crowd were chanting Seven Nation Army, you know, so we kind of had to surrender.
Guitar shops all across the country are sick of that sound. I think,
pretty much,
like smoke on the water. It's the modern kind of.
But it was interesting watching him interact with that drummer. The drummer was still very much his focal point. You know, whenever he was soloing and kind of going off on a tangent, he would head towards the drummer and work with the drummer. But it was interesting watching the drummer absolutely just perfectionize all of the percussion for the White Stripes songs, and not just, it weren't mimicking Meg White's interpreter. He was his own interpretation of that, and it was a very technical and very very amped up version of and Jack White having chosen that, you know, he obviously auditioned that fellow to perform, to drum on that album and to come on tour with him. Yeah, I just found that to be quite interesting in itself.
And let's talk about the physical album itself.
The record, this is what I mean, obviously, like I said, you know,
it's a curious thing, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, as an album, musically, it's brilliant, but then you have all of the other side to it, which is what makes people obsessed with Third Man Records in the way they do. You know, it's called the Ultra LP, and I think there's certainly more than two completely brand new, never before done details within the record itself. For example, it's the first and only triple album, a triple speed album. So it plays at 33, it plays at 45, and it plays at 78. There are two locking grooves, so when you play the A side, it will glide into a locking groove. That's been done before, fine. But on the A side, it plays from the inside out into a locking groove. So the locking groove itself is actually around the outside of the record, which is new. So watching it, I don't know, it's the first record I've ever owned that played from inside out. So that was interesting to watch in itself. One side is matte, so it's got like it looks like a 78. So that's the B side. Also on the B side, there are two separate introductions to the first track on that side. So depending on where you drop the stylus, you will get an electric instruction or an acoustic instruction, which is awesome. And they both channel, obviously, those separate starting points and separate grooves that run parallel to one another, and then they channel into one.
You've got to have some good light and a steady hand to kind of play around with this record, I think.
You do. And the good light is essential, because I think one of the best touches and the final touch to it would be it's got a hologram, which has never been seen before on a record. That's never been done before. It's got a laser etched hologram, which is on the inside of the label. As the album spins, you can make out. It takes a bit like an art, like magic eye, when you have to stare at that image for ages until eventually you see something that's not actually there. It feels a bit like that, but eventually you see it, and there's an angel that rotates top and bottom, and it looks phenomenal.
There's a lot of thought, I think, gone into the kind of the experience, isn't there? Not just obviously the content
of
the album.
That's one of the
but...
things about what they do at Third Man that's cool. You know, you can tell they're massive geeks. They love what they do, and they push that back upon the people that buy the records.
It's a key word, isn't it? Experience. And Jack White's very aware that playing vinyl is an experience.
Yep.
And he's just kind of pushed the boundaries of that and pushed it forward. It's fantastic. Jack White is very aware of the theatre and the drama in music. That's what he does so well. And it's great that he's pushed this over 100-year-old format forward, you know, and here we are.
Really. I mean, there's been articles in Mojo, there's been lots of reviews, there's one in I think the NME kind of Well, definitely. But there's been different strains of approach towards how this album's been received. Some people have just argued, you know, that enough of all of that, let's just hear the album. Yeah, okay, fine. I can understand that perspective. And the Enemy were kind of behind that to a certain extent. I think they kind of insinuated he might be mental. But I to me, when I read the articles where he is actually explaining what's going on here, all I hear is a dude that's excited, and I love that, man. That I find that's been infectious, and I get as excited. So yeah, I think there was one detail about the album that I haven't mentioned as well, that it's got it. He's done this before with Sevens, I believe, but there is a hidden track. There's two hidden tracks, in fact, underneath the label. So that I think they originally toyed around with doing this before, where you'd have to peel the label back, all right? But then you get a lot of people that don't want to peel the label back on their records, and also it leaves glue in the groove, so it doesn't really work very well. So for this album, I think they managed to actually countersink the label into the grooves for the hidden track that's under it. Now, from what I've heard, and I say what I've heard because I haven't actually been able to find a player that will play. Steve's teasing.
Steve's got a huge smile on his face
it's
at this point.
Best Jack White song you've ever heard.
The A-side, the inner label plays at 45, and on the B-side, the inner label plays at 78, which is what makes it a triple speed album. And, yeah, you have to have a player that will lift and you get your stylus past the inner rim, if you like, onto the label. And I don't have one of those, and Steve does.
Regular record player, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Regular, run of the mill.
Yeah.
Ordinary.
And you've also got to have a triple speed as well, which by today's standards aren't that easy to come by, unless you come in. How many have we got in here in Pine Hi-Fi right now? Triple speed players?
I'd say at least the four. Portables usually are. I mean, this one here is actually
Bush is triple speed.
Quadruple speed, because it's 16, which 16. Not a lot of people know exists.
Yeah.
But there is a 16 speed, so.
We're going to come to the delights of Pine and Hi-Fi very soon,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen. But if you've just joined us, if you're just tuned in now, you're listening to the Piecast from Pie and Vinyl, which is very exciting.
Woo!
And we're talking about our kind of records and listens of the I suppose May, June, July, really a kind of bit of a mix.
Yeah.
One of the, I think by Act of Parliament, I have to actually mention Neil Young in every Piecast, and there's an obvious link there, isn't there, with
Jack White?
Jack White
as well, aren't
you? Because he was involved in the A Letter Home project, which if you haven't had a chance to listen to, I think it's a classic demonstration of something that is best listened to on vinyl. You know, that sounds a little bit exclusive, but actually I think it does sound much better as a record than it would as an MP3 or as a CD. And it's, I was talking about this on the radio recently, it's a fantastic idea. It's basically Neil Young goes into something called, I think, a voiceogram, which is kind of like a telephone booth that records a vinyl directly to vinyl. It used to be very popular many years ago. In fact, I think they had one on South Parade Pier. I think there was actually one of these things there. It's a great album, and it's a very hard listen initially, but it's a really personal and very direct album, and it's essentially Neil Young talking to his parents and other people who have passed, have moved from this mortal coil, and he does that through interpretations of other people's work, and it really works quite well. I think it sounds, when you could first listen to it, you think, well, it sounds a bit scratchy and a bit muffly and a bit strange, but actually I like that. It's almost like it's somewhere out in space, stuck in a different time zone, and you've tapped into it and you've just managed to hear it, and it's a very nice record, I think.
I think the thing that's exciting about it as well, from that, because my take on it, I've actually only listened to it once through and the first track is a track. Basically, he's obviously sat there in this little phone booth recording a letter that he's got in his hand, probably direct to acetate, and I think to his mum, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's then going to be posted off. So the fact that you say it's like almost like you've tapped into some sort of, you know, message in space sort of thing, something like, you know, some sort of distress signal, if you like, or because that's initially, I guess, what those machines would have been for.
And this
people
machine
would have posted,
I think,
these records instead of sending a handwritten letter. They post a hand record, you know, a voice recorded message to people, which was really sweet, I suppose.
And this machine has been lovingly restored by Jack White and sits somewhere in his studio.
It's in Third Man Records.
And there's a beautiful story, an amazing story, that when Neil Young was kind of coaxed to go and have a look at it, he was very keen, I think, to have a look at it. And he went down, he was showed where it was, and there was a guy in the booth recording a Neil Young song. And that guy came out of the booth and saw Neil Young. If that was me, I would have passed out, I think. But, you know, what an amazing thing, you know, that guy must be.
It's the only one in the world, I think, isn't it? And, yeah, surprisingly, Jack White's got his hands on it, and Neil Young's another one that completely understands the theatre in music, and it's almost like he opened a little portal into his life and his true feelings. I mean, those words to his mum and talking about, you know, you should start talking to dad again and it's all right. They're really quite personal, but done in a humorous way. And although it's essentially a time capsule back to the kind of 50s, 60s, it's very modern. And how do they do this? You know, we're very aware in a modern context that we're in this modern year, 2014, and then we're being back to the 50s, 60s, you know.
It's very clever. It's a very clever way of accentuating the kind of personal experience and the personal record.
What he's saying is absolutely true, but it's almost like he's kind of the voice he speaks in. It's almost like a mock American voice.
Yeah.
Almost a mock American DJ voice, radio DJ voice. Obviously, he's Canadian. But it's true. It's him. It's real. It's happening. It's happening now. But it should be the 60s, and it feels a bit wrong and a bit confusing. And with the crackles on there, that accentuates the value of it, the whole feeling as an experience of putting on that record. There's a lot of nods on there to songs that have heavily inspired him. Obviously, the artists on there are artists he's admired, but I remember just hearing his cover of Needle of Death, the Bertie Ahern song, and that's exactly the same as Ambulance Blues. Very on purpose. He's kind of said, okay, that inspired me, and I love that song on the beach. It's fascinating, almost like you're reading a book, but you're listening to a piece of music. It's, yeah, great.
There's some great footage, actually. You should seek it out on YouTube. There's some great footage of Neil Young on The Tonight Show or something like that in the States, where he kind of recreates how he made the record, and he does Needle of Death. And he's filmed in front of a live audience. And the minute he steps in, and they've got cameras kind of rigged up into the actual booth that they've obviously transported. But the minute he steps into it, the whole audience and the whole studio completely silent. You know, and Jack White's there, I think, as well with him.
So powerful.
Completely silent.
Yeah.
And it's a great
machine record. Is the time machine, you know, and it's literally a time machine.
I think we might be getting one in Pine Vinyl.
Wow, I'll tell you what.
It's on
time
order.
Machine. Yeah, definitely.
It's on order.
Machine,
it's on order. let's move on, because time is of the essence as ever. And Steve, we could go back in time. What's your other choice?
Yeah,
what's your other thing you've been listening to?
Yeah, I'll keep it brief. It's Honeyblood, a pop duet from Glasgow, signed to Fat Cat Records. They're actually second on our stage at Southsea Fest. It's got some fantastic reviews nationally, critically. They're little spiteful pop gems.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's a two-piece, which is very on vogue at the moment.
They'll use that females on the sticker they put on their cover, I think.
Oh, they should do.
They should.
You can have that for free, girls. But yeah, you know, it's a drums, it's guitar, but they mean that, you know. It's about a breakup, I believe, and she spits some words. She's not very happy. And it's something we've all felt, and you know, it's not gonna change your life, but it's very well done, and they're immaculate little songs. And I'm a sucker for a Scottish vocal, I've got to say. So and a Scottish female vocal, and yeah, it's it hits the heart, and I enjoyed it. And they're playing on our Southsea Fest stage, so delighted with that.
Excellent stuff. The other thing I picked up on, which I liked, I think probably came out right at the beginning of June, I think, was the Cherry Ghost album, Herd Runners, which I think is the third album from them, maybe fourth album from them. A great record, really, really nice kind of album, it really hangs together very well. Strange in that there's a track on it that I was listening to over and over again. I thought, this reminds me of something. I can't place who it reminds me of. It hit me. I was driving along in the car, and I thought, this sounds like Robert Palmer, the great Robert Palmer. And I thought, that's a bit of a strange feedback loop. But it's a really great album. There's a track on there I really like called Drinking for Two, which is a real sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek narrative about sort of being constantly stood up and becoming an alcoholic because a relationship's breaking down. But a really, really nice song. So check that one out. Rad, have you got one more? Are you?
No, you've had my two.
We've had his
or,
two.
Or and that's right. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Courtney Barnett as well recently. I mean, that's the thing. We're right in the midst of the festival season, coming towards the end of it, I suppose. So, yeah, I've managed to stumble across quite a few gems over the course of the last 2 months. And Courtney Barnett was something that caught me by surprise. I'd heard good things about, you know, what she was doing. and was intrigued and tempted by what we've got in the record room. But yeah, other distractions, so I hadn't quite made a purchase. But yeah, heard
it's
a play.
Great thing about festivals and that you
it's brilliant. It's such
you walk around,
exposure.
You bump into artists you've heard of, not necessarily listened to, and then you walk away from the festival with a nice long list of 20 records you're going to go and purchase.
I mean, she was brilliant, really, 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 encapsulating. Her performance was really, really, it just absorbed me, really. It was great. So I've been listening to quite a lot of that. So that's three.
There's a bulging record bag, isn't there, for people to come along to Pine Vinyl and check out all of those recommendations.
Absolutely.
That we've had there. Come down. Now, also, I'm not a huge fan of annexation. It's been in the news a lot recently, you know, with various countries moving into others. But one annexation I'm very happy about is Pi and Hi-Fi, which is where we're sitting at the moment. You may notice slightly different acoustics in here. An eerie silence, but a poignant one, perhaps. I'm not sure. Now, Steve, we probably should start by explaining what Pi and Hi-Fi is and how it came about.
Well, okay. Talking about time capsules, it's our little time capsule, and we're in the basement area in Shop down Castle Road. The idea of Shop is it's a bit of a snooper's paradise. There's several different concessions. There's a florist that only sells British flowers. There's a wonderful vintage shop. There's a gallery, a framer. And it just generally sounds kind of quality knickknacks. And then Pi and Hi-Fi, we're in the basement. And yeah, we sell vintage, great quality record players, separates. We sell kind of portables, which are the literally portable, although you wouldn't really consider them portable these days. Record players, which look beautiful. We sell the turntables, a variety of amps. We also sell some new bits. We have some Crossley bits. For your absolutely immaculate hi-fi sound, high-fidelity experience, come and see us.
There are some magnificent-looking machines in here.
They're just so pretty. They are selling very, very well. But I do get a little bit upset when they leave. But I guess, you know, we get a new one in. But again, it's when these things were produced, historically, we've probably got lots of items from, I'd say, the 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s. They were built to last, you know. That's the beauty of them. They're indestructible. The design is very classic. There's veneer wood models, silver models, black models. And that's a great thing. If you wanted to make a centrepiece of these beautiful record players in your front room, we've got an all-in-one, actually, right by you, James, which is including with speakers, a turntable, a radio, and it's actually got a built-in 8-track player.
I've been after an 8-track player for a long time.
Well, there we go. It's literally tapping you on the shoulder. But, you know, James have outshone me here. It's hard to explain the visuals on radio, but they are just immaculate, really great condition machines. We put a 3-month warranty on all of our bits.
That's the great thing. I mean, buy on eBay, wonderful, but you don't get any protection or any form of warranty or any form of you don't get anywhere to go if it doesn't function the way it should, or if a part goes on it that you can no longer source.
Absolutely,
all of these.
It's got those things I miss so much from the smartphone. I think it's called, you know, from the mobile phone. It's got sliders, knobs, and buttons.
Yeah,
we don't get many of those anymore. But you know, again, there's a real
shapes and sizes.
It's a tactile thing, isn't it? You know, kind of think, oh, what does the balance do?
Yeah.
Oh, let's have a play with that. You know, it's quite a different thing. Now, also, all of the records that kind of we're surrounded by in this bunker, this fabulous bunker, are all lovingly sort of maintained and restored, aren't they? They're all kind of fixed and working. And as Rad said, there's a three month warranty.
Yes, they're restored to new, basically. You know, as if they would have walked out their respective showrooms 30, 40, 50 years ago. So
some of them are still boxed, aren't they?
Yeah, we do have a lot of the boxes. We have where we can, the original instructions. And just even, I'm going to sound nerdy here, but we've got a garage with some paper instructions from the 50s. The really nice kind of corrugated, thick paper embossed with grey print. Yeah. But that's the attention to detail we love.
He didn't sound that nerdy, did he?
Only a little bit. He's drawling. If anybody you can't see, he is drawling.
You also offer kind of what I would call a hi-fi hospital. Is that right? You kind of people have got these kind of things and they're bust or they need a little bit of TLC.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We do offer a repair service. It's proved to be really, really, really popular. I mean, a lot of people now are getting their vinyl records players out of the loft to play their vinyl again. And chances are they may have been up there for 20, 30 years, so, you know, they need a service, they probably need a new stylus on them. If you want to do that, just pop it in to us, you know, we'll look after that for you. The prices in here, it's in our best interest to keep them as low as possible, to encourage people to go into the shop and buy our records. So I've actually got a deal where if you buy the three separates for the Immaculate High Fidelity Experience, the turntable, the amp, and a choice of speakers, you can mix and match any design style. We actually give you a £20 record gift voucher to start your collection or
That's
to carry on
deal.
Your collection in Pye and Vinyl. Yeah.
And there's also, I've noticed, there is a record player in here which has something I believe is called a universal serial bus cable, or a USB cable, which I think are becoming increasingly popular.
Yeah.
Will you explain that? I mean, because there is a... I think, for me personally, when I sit at home, we were talking about this a bit earlier, when I sit at home and listen to a record, I do it through my computer.
Yeah.
Because I've got a big sound processing thing on my computer.
Right.
So that's kind of my speaker system. But you lose something if you trade the vinyl sound onto an MP3.
But there are ways
of doing it where you can get away with it, I think.
Yeah, again, it's one of those weird things that have been created possibly for the older customer, i.e. to put your old records onto the computer or onto a hard drive format. I think if you're a new record purchaser, you've got a download code or a CD that comes with the actual record.
That's a great thing as well,
isn't it? Yeah, that's it. And that's really why vinyl has come back so strongly and we've arrived at the ultimate format. Yeah, I think it's really for old records that don't have a download code. The thought of really kind of translating a 24-bit sound in digital terms onto a nasty little 3-bit sound can only be for practical reasons.
Yeah.
You know, getting it onto your computer, putting it on your iPod, just kind of reminding yourself. But, you know, you want to be sat in your front room with an incredible sound that's not compressed, and you want to kind of have that experience again, putting a record player on a beautiful bit of machinery. Yeah, like to think we can offer that. So come and see us, just for a look around. It's nice and pretty and relaxed in here. So
it's fantastic, and it's great space, and there's a nice feel to it. You know, in
yeah,
the same
I'm
way
trying.
With the shop, there's a kind of atmosphere.
Yeah,
I think you've got that again here, which is great. On a nerdy note, we were talking about the Neil Young A Letter Home. You can slap my wrists later, but I recorded that as a FLAC file.
Okay.
If anyone's heard of what a FLAC file
slightly
is.
Slightly higher quality.
And I tried to listen to it, and I couldn't listen to it. It didn't sound right. Do you know what I mean? It didn't have that kind of warmth. And again, that sounds a bit kind of nerdy, but it doesn't.
It's true.
You lose something. So, anyway, the word warmth is a good one, because you've been up to lots of things over the summer, or the start of the summer. It's not over yet. I'm not going to wish that on us.
But like a long summer. But
Pye and Vinyl has kind of been on tour. You've been up to things and doing things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this year we wanted to take the experience outside of the shop. So we've been involved with a few music festivals. I mean, I guess it started with the BBC Manchester Six Festival, where we took our wares up into Manchester and represented not only ourselves, but the local area. And we sold our records, our merch and pies. We took that on to the Isle of Wight Festival, which we learnt an awful lot from. Seeing a festival that size work, we also had a hand in curating the stage and putting some bands from our label. And again, representing the very strong music scene in Southsea. We took that on to Blissfields, which is a smaller niche festival, based in kind of about 10 miles outside of Winchester. Incredible vibes there, really nice.
Somewhere
site.
In a field in Hampshire.
Somewhere.
That has resonance with me somewhere, but anyway, carry on.
Oh, yeah. In the middle of the night, Yeah, Blissfields was great. It's 4,000 capacity. Beauty of the smaller festivals, we kind of reach everyone, and by the last night we saw loads of kids running around and adults in Pye Vinyl tie-dye t-shirts. Sold a
Did
lot
you have
of
a
ice.
Warm feeling when you saw that?
Yeah, it's always an absolute honour when you see anyone wear a Pye and Vinyl, and slightly kind of confusing, but in a beautiful way. So
Blissfield, to be like a colleague, you know. I see somebody wearing a Pye and Vinyl t-shirt, I tend to double take them, because I think
I look the other way, I get slightly embarrassed.
Is that Rob Litchfield? And then I realise it's not, because you know, it's got more hair.
I think people don't pay enough attention to the Pye and Vinyl logo, where they don't recognise the pie spinning on the turntable being read effectively by the fork stylus.
That's
and I think they need to pay more attention. But anyway.
Well, thanks, James, for highlighting that. It's
what would that pie have
to
say
about
if
the
it
little
was
details
played by a fork stylus, you know?
I think
what would it sound like, James?
I think it would scream early Duran Duran.
Definitely.
At least some of that.
Blissfields. So
you're still there, aren't you, in your mind? I know.
I'm still there, and I'm thinking about Duran Duran, maybe on a yacht or something. Oh, like
that's
that.
Beautiful.
So Blissfields worked very well for us, and we've sort of brought it back home. We've done the Sassy Food Fest again. Mm. That was. These are all kind of trial and errors, and we're very much cutting our teeth and trying to learn in lots of different ways. So just a food fest, which was fantastic because we sold so many T-shirts again, lots of pies. And we've got the Sousy Show coming up this weekend. We've got our own tent for this one. So we've got some great bands. And then we've got Victorious Festival.
It's going to be big this year.
Yeah,
very
it's
big.
Going really big. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. It's wonderful. The guys have done a great job. Again, they're both family-friendly festivals and experiences. We're curating a little stage at the Victorious Festival as well, representing the local Sousy music scene, as we are in both of them. Hmm. And then we've got Sousy Fest, which we've been involved with in the last couple of years at the end of September, which is always a staff favourite. And we've got our regular stage at the Wine Vaults. We should be able to announce our stage and line up very soon. We're selling tickets for Victorious Festival and also Sousy Fest. So, yeah, come and see us in the shop.
Pop in.
It's been a busy summer, but as you say, the kids have just finished school, so we're surely halfway through the summer, and we've got another half.
School's out for summer. School's again, out. Again, you know, it's all this somewhere in my mind, that's a lyric.
It's very confusing.
Let's, just to kind of wrap things up, as it were, let's talk about the menu. Let's talk about summer menu. Let's talk about things you've got brewing.
Again, this year we are very conscious of, I guess, pie and mash being a traditional winter, autumn, possibly spring food for the soul. But of course it works in the summer. So we always had this idea of attaching salad as an option to the pie and mash meal. We're all about contemporary cuisine. And again, very modern ideas, but, you know, possibly traced back to very traditional times. So we first introduced the salad option with the pie. We've looked at our pie options. We've gone for lighter pies in dietary calorie needs as well as some of the flavours.
Are they hot pies with salad? Or?
Yeah, you can have cold, but yes, they're hot pies and they work really well. Mm. We flavour them with a local vinaigrette cordial firm called Giarti. They've recently been on the James Martin Saturday Morning Chef.
Well, they've made it.
And they're great, you know, raspberry, elderflower flavours, all of the salad sauce from the Sousy Greenhouse. So again, it's you know, we only purchase local and British. So they've gone really well. We've also introduced sweet pies. They've gone down very well. Our sweet cherry pie kind of links in with our Twin Peaksy feel.
There's a lot of thought and care, I think, that goes
absolutely,
into your menu.
Yeah.
People sometimes, I think, again, like the logo, they need to look closer into the offer that you have. Because
we invite them to.
It's not just throwing a pie on a plate.
And we hope they do. You know, our sweet pie meal deal is essentially a recreation of the hot pie meal deal, which is a sweet pie with honey and oat vanilla ice cream, which replicates the mashed potato, the pistachio ice cream, which replicates the minty mushy peas, and our very own chocolate gravy, which is Nutella sauce.
Chocolate gravy.
So poured over the top. So, you know, it's very popular with the students and has sold very well. I'm glad you said that, James. It's all about the little details, and that's what we do very well.
I may very well go out like Elvis because of chocolate gravy one day, but let's not. We won't go into that.
I mean, you know, Rad might be able to talk more about that's a bit of the menu, but we've also got the drinks.
Well, you were bubbling away with something in your ceramic, what I'm going to call a stein. People know what a stein is, don't they, I think? A tankard of some kind.
Yes,
what were you indulging in there?
Well, I've got a nice latte here. I've got an iced latte.
Iced latte, ladies and gentlemen.
I guess I'm Captain Coffee, if you will.
Are you? Have you got a sidekick?
Yes. In the shop. I haven't got a sidekick, but, you know, I'm auditioning, so.
Excellent.
You know, but basically, I'm quite passionate about coffee. I enjoy coffee. It pretty much replaces most of the fluid in my body and pumps around it. So, you know, us basically, you know, being able to deliver an offer, a coffee that we're proud of, is important for us. So we've recently kind of pulled our socks up and waded in. We've got a big boy's machine for producing coffee.
It doesn't mean physically wading into the coffee.
No.
If you're coming into the shop, Rad's feet won't make contact with your drink, just to be clear.
No, my boots may be filled with coffee granules,
but that's for personal.
But you know, that's that. Yeah, it's altogether private. so, but yeah, we now offer a full range of coffee from espresso right through to your iced latte, and we've had our own bean roasted, which we're really proud of. We've managed to narrow it down like just by tasting a range of different coffees and settling on something that we can't live without. Well, I certainly can't live without it. And again, like Steve said, always sourced locally, always sourced in the UK. And we've managed to get it from a small independent supplier as well, which we're really happy about. We've managed to stay away from these big fish.
I think those kind of things are really important because, again, it's about experience, isn't it? And it's about, you know, supporting, not just supporting industry, but culture as well. It's, you know, kind of
absolutely
developing that culture as well.
Yeah. Without a doubt, get a better quality service because there's less people to focus on. And, you know, these guys have taught us so much about coffee. Our beans are fresh as, you know, never, ever, ever over 2 weeks old. A lot of your bigger beans, you know, they will have shelf lives of over a year.
Yeah.
So it we've learned so much of roasting and
I think the UK's got a lot to learn. You know, Britain's got a lot to learn. I mean, we've been drinking coffee for a long time, but countries like Australia, which you could argue would be leading the charge on independent coffee, could have got a lot to teach us. You know, as a culture, it is not what we would expect, what we actually think it is. There's a lot more to it. You know, so it's nice to see. You know, certainly in the Portsmouth and Southsea area, the understanding and knowledge of coffee is growing, and we like to think we're a part of that, which is nice.
Very soon there'll be a plantation, I imagine, somewhere at the end of Castle Road. We might only get a few beans, but you know.
Well, it might be long, won't be long before you can sort of buy the beans that we're serving in shop to take home with you, whether you want them ground or not ground. You know,
working on some very very attractive branding for our coffee and our beans. And yeah, as Rad says, they'll be available very soon by the bag, by the bean. And I believe, Mr. Sandys, you've purchased a grinder recently.
I have. I've spent a lot of money on a very high-tech coffee grinding device, which now all I need is beans. So, you know, maybe I'm in the right place.
I'm your man.
Point me in the right way. Okay, just to finish, I think you just wanted to talk about some things that will come out in autumn, or the autumn, some things on the horizon.
Yeah, I just wanted to very briefly look ahead. As always, these things are never really confirmed until we officially confirm them. But, you know, we are very much looking to book ahead. So we've got the autumn quarter coming. Our pie and film, we've got a lot of momentum with that. Hopefully, the guys that have been along to that so far have enjoyed that experience. We've got the Slint Breadcrumb Trail movie coming up on the 17th of August.
Taking bookings for that right now. So
that's it. Have a look on the website. It's filling up. Mm. So, you know, not many seats left possibly, but get yourself in there. We'll soon announce, you know, what we've got coming up for September, October, November, December, Pine film-wise. The in-stores, I can't say too much, but they're looking great.
Big secrets.
It's looking good for us in the autumn. So I just say make sure you sign up to our mailing list because those guys do hear first of all. Pine Vinyl Presents, we've got Emily Barker at the Square Tower with her new project with a Swedish folk project called Vena Porte. Supporting them is the Diamond Road Show. They were a visual auditory experience. They play behind a great big projection. And it's an acoustic act that kind of tell a story. It's almost like a film behind that projection at the Square Tower, which is just an absolute delight to put anything on in there. Tickets are £6 are available in store now. We're hoping to lock in a couple more sort of acts for the autumn, working probably within the Eastney Cellars again, which has worked well for us, and the Square Tower. And then it's into Christmas, and we're working on a variety of original gift ideas. And also we want to launch our delivery service, our takeaway service, shall I say. So there'll be news on that coming up as well.
There's a whole bundle of things
there's a lot going on to digest. Yeah.
So even though we haven't had a podcast for a couple of months, I think we've over-delivered, which is excellent.
That's it. We don't keep still at Pie and Vinyl.
No, we don't gather dust. Well, that's just about it, I think, in terms of the time that we've got. For all links and wonderful things to all the kind of things we've been talking about, you can go onto the website, which is pieandvinyl.co.uk. From the palatial surroundings of the Pie and Hi-Fi Bunker, as I'm going to affectionately call it, that's the end of this podcast. Thanks to Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, James, very much.
And thanks to Rad.
Thank you, James.
Who's going to off now to get his trousers fixed. And we'll see you again very soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheerio.